Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to your go-to Detroit Pistons podcast, The Pistons Pulse, co-hosted by me, Bryce Simon of Motor City Hoops, a former D1 hooper and current teacher, husband, and father of three amazing kids.
Now I'm Omari Sacco for the second Pistons beat writer for the Detroit Free Press.
And of course, we're blessed to always be joined by our producer, Wes Davenport. And if you aren't listening to him over on the Detroit Bad Boys YouTube with the pin down with Blake Silverman, you guys need to be checking that out. But today, guys, we are blessed. We are honored, bringing out of, I think in his own words, semi-retirement, we are joined by the man, the myth, the legend, the GOAT of Pistons content creation, Laz Jackson. Laz, what's going on?
I'm happy to be here. I'm excited to be here. Thanks for inviting me, Bryce and Omari. I appreciate it. I'm glad we could find a time that actually worked. Trying to do this for like a couple months now.
But Laz, you are a busy man. Just catch us up, man. How's life? How are you doing?
Bryce, we're doing potty training.
That's why we can't get you on the pod, because you're trying to get the... Only you and I understand this. Omari, Wes, maybe someday. Laz, right now, me and my wife are having a staycation. So all three of our kids were with grandparents. Mm-hmm. We didn't leave the house. We're staying at home. Just me and the missus for 3 days. If you guys aren't watching on video, go check out YouTube just to see Laz's face, because he gets it. He understands what I'm talking about
just
here.
Just the pure joy. Like I have a staycation every day, so I can't relate, you know?
How is the potty training going, Laz? Because that, like, straight up, that can get, like, stressful. That was some of the more, like, stressful times for me.
We're making good progress. He will sit on the toilet and use it, but he won't let you know if he has to go or not. So you'll be like wandering around and you like see him and you're like, you have to go to the bathroom. He's like, no. He's like, no, you do. I see you. Like, come on, let's go. But we gotta get it right, because he has to be potty trained to get into this Montessori school. And I'm not going to, this is the last thing, I promise. But like, that's in August. And so I was like, all right, we got a timeline. Tick, tick, tick. Like, we got to make this thing work. So.
That's what's crazy. People don't understand the stress of parenthood. Like, it's not just potty training your child to not get judged by the other parents on the block. Mm-hmm. You can't send them to school until they are potty trained. Like, we went through this with our youngest. You want to go to preschool next year? You got to learn to get on the pod. And so I'm glad, Laz, to have somebody on the pod that can share these experiences with me. Because Omari's over here just living the bachelor life, waking up, going to bed, going out, whatever he wants to do. And I'm like, you don't understand, bro. So, Laz, I appreciate it. Anything? What else is good? How's the missus? How's life? How's everything going? Update everybody.
Life's good. Life's good. I appreciate everyone's concern. Things are going well. Like, job's good. Like, the only thing in my life that's going poorly is the Detroit Pistons. Yeah.
And that's why we brought you on, to have this therapy session.
Yeah, Omari, I think Hal said it in your comments, like, we got to bring Laz on to talk about the 10-win Detroit Pistons. Like, this is
what we're doing. We absolutely do. We absolutely do. We've been trying to get lots of thoughts on this disaster of a season for months, because we just need to hear it. We need to hear it, man. Like, we know you haven't been potting this season, and it's probably been nice enough to talk about this team as often, but we had to drag you out of your comfort zone, and we just really have to talk about this awful team. So, hey, we're glad we finally made it.
Greatness. And in a peek behind the curtain, we've tried to have Laz on, and because schedules are crazy and all of that, we haven't been able to make it work. So we are going to talk Pistons now, because it's awesome that we got him. So Laz, let's start with the most recent game on Saturday. We'll work from there and we'll just riff off of that. That's kind of what we do. And that's what's great about having you on. You're an expert and a pro at this as well. The Mavs game up till halftime was all right. Asar doing a pretty good job on Luka. I think the team in general doing a good job on Luka. Luka gets it going. Second half is just a disaster. Where do you want to go with that? Asar's defense, maybe how Cade played, kind of going toe-to-toe with Luka for a bit. Where do you want to start?
So where actually I want to start is with Jalen Duren.
Okay.
The shove and the technical.
Yeah.
Yeah. The ejection. And I think it was a very like young guy thing, but I also think that he's falling into the trap too often of letting offense dictate his defense. And he really was having a tough time getting it going offensively against like Daniel Gafford and Dwight Powell. And I know that had to be really frustrating for him. He was in foul trouble like most of the game. And so I want to eventually get to a point where like he's better defensively and his offensive effort and his defensive effort are like not like directly tied to one another. You know, Bryce, when at the beginning of the season, right, we talked about how the major thing we wanted to see from Barron this year was improvement on the defensive end.
Yep.
You know, we kind of haven't seen it. I forget who it was. Someone pointed out to me that like Assar has more stocks than Duren. Is like that is very noticeable, right? Like, yes, Assar is already an amazing defensive player, but like you would still think that Duren would be impacting the game defensively, like at that level, and that hasn't been the case. And so
that's Duren's growth area, right? It's just he has to. I think the biggest factor for his growth going forward is him just bringing like that defense first approach and not the offense first approach, because he's grown offensively this year for sure. But if you're not a Jokic or even like a Şengün level guy, like you gotta be defense first, and that just hasn't been the approach so far.
Real quick here, Laz, Jalen Duren, not only does Assar have more stocks, Jalen Duren has 63 total stocks, 23 steals, 40 blocks. Assar has 68 steals. Like, and he has 59 blocks, so he almost has more of each individual stat than Duren has total. So I'll let you cook some more on this because I think it is important, but that is fascinating. I'm so glad you brought that up.
Yeah. No, and to Amari's point, like you can see the work he's put into his like footwork offensively.
Yes.
You can see the results when it's something he like wants to put the effort into. And so you hope like down the line he puts that effort into the defensive end. And Amar, you invoked like Jokic and Şengün. I'm thinking of like even like Domantas Sabonis, right?
Sabonis,
time all-star, like another like huge triple-double guy. And the Kings aren't going, they're probably going to make the playoffs, but like no one expects a lot of them because the defense is so poor, right? It's like if you want to have long-term success, like it has to be, you don't have to be like an elite level defense, but you have to hit like a baseline level of competency that we haven't seen from Jalen Duren at this time.
So there's a lot of issues with this roster, Laz, and we want to talk about all of them with you. But do you think this ranks higher than maybe what people have given it credit for? I feel like in the last month, this has become a conversation. Our last episode, we talked about NBA draft stuff, and we talked about Alex Saar and potentially drafting Alex Saar, and then maybe you trade Jalen Duren. Because like, do you think this defensive anchor type big, if he's not going to be that, do you think that's one of the bigger quote unquote issues or something that needs to be solved, whether it's him or some other option?
I do. Because he's such a perfect offensive pairing with Cade, like you would like to be able to keep him around. But if he doesn't progress to that baseline level on the defensive end, that makes it a lot tougher to keep him around, right? And so this, like, as a guy who, like, I know the phrase core four has been very overused
with
the Pistons team, but as a guy who I think pairs really well with Cade, which is what I'm thinking about in my mind, like matters for this Pistons team. Like what goes with Cade is like, you'd like him to be better on defense because offensively, like he's a perfect match with what Cade plays.
And Amari, I know you want to get in on this. I was just going to say real quick, there is a play in this game against the Mavs where he gets blocked by Gafford at the rim. And afterwards, they're both about the same spot on the baseline. And Gafford beats him down the floor and gets a wide open dunk, essentially because Duren didn't sprint back. And I'm glad you tied this all into, because I don't think we should overjudge what happened with the shoving. It was frustration, right? Like it was the offensive frustration, the foul trouble, and then he's not doing well defensively and all of that. Omari, where are you at with Jalen Duren? We've talked about him a lot, but I think Laz brings up some really interesting thoughts here just with the defense, his pairing with Cade, all of that.
Yeah, to me, it's just got to be a fundamental shift in Duren's approach. Because even on offense, right, like he is such a good, his chemistry with Cade is amazing, obviously. And you see some of the things he's doing passing-wise. And, you know, I think offensively, he can really be a monster on the current trajectory he's on. But just in a modern NBA, like if you're big and you can't play defense, like you pretty much have to be Jokic for it to work, right? Like you, like especially when the playoffs hit, like you'll just be destroyed. And I think at this point, you know, for most teams, Duren would probably be a backup, you know, simply because of his weakness on defense right now. You know, so to me, that's, or not just to me, I think, you know, it's pretty clear across the board, you know, he's got a fundamentally changed his approach to the game where, you know, it's just clear. Like, you see the dunks, and sometimes he sticks his tongue out at the bench and whatnot. Like, that's what gets him going. But, you know, it needs to be the block shots and things like that too. And just in two seasons, we have not really seen that aspect of his game outside of a handful of games, like earlier this season in Miami and Charlotte, for example.
Yeah, and I mean, you guys both brought it up. It's intriguing because of the improvement we've seen offensively, right? And can he then translate that into defensive improvement? I don't know. I do know this. We got to bring Laz on more often because we have more live viewers than we have ever had on the podcast. Draft reaction, trade reaction, free agent, anything. So everybody watching live, thank you. If you're on YouTube, hit the like, hit the subscribe. If you're over on Twitter, find some way to support the pod. You know, either go to Apple, Spotify, on the YouTube, like, subscribe, give a rating, review, all of that different type of stuff. All right, Laz, you've talked about defense. So we could talk about Ausar, or you talked about Durant's chemistry with Cade. Obviously, we could go that direction as well. You're giving us some engagement here, so I'm going to keep letting you be the man of choice. Which way do you want
to
go?
So the second thing I wanted to talk to you guys about was Ausar, right?
Okay.
So
yeah.
Over the last seven games, Ausar is shooting 4 threes a game, right? He's like shooting like 30% on them, but he's just shooting 4 threes a game, which is something that we hadn't even looked at the rim from beyond the arc, like prior to the All-Star break, it felt like. And so I've been really encouraged that he's looking to take those shots when they're given to him once again. Less encouraged by the results, right? But like, that's a work in progress. Like, we'll see how that goes. And you could really see how, like, I noticed it in the Miami game that they lost. Like, he got some hard closeouts from Miami defenders because he'd made I think they showed during the broadcast, he made like 6 of his last 12 threes or something. And so, like, when he's able to draw closeouts, you could really see the, like, downhill playmaking. You can see the rim pressure. You could see all the great stuff that's about his offensive game. But that doesn't get to shine when guys just, like, kind of lay off him and, like, let him shoot, right? And so I've been encouraged by the shot. The shots, I think, like, it's in a place that's improving. And him being willing to just, like, take this time at the end of the season to try this stuff is really encouraging, and it's something I think to build on for next year, right?
Laz, I'm curious to get your thoughts on this, and I tweeted this in Miami. Like, Ausar, his interior shooting, like short mid-range, pretty much anything within the free throw line, he's like one of the better shooters in the league. He takes more of those shots than a lot of people, and he makes a lot of them. He's got that turnaround jumper, like his touch in that range is pretty good. He's not a good free throw shooter. Pretty much anything but behind the free throw line, it just completely falls off of a cliff. I guess, what do you make of that in general, just to see a guy who kind of has that type of shooting, which is really, especially in the modern NBA, is pretty unique. Does that give you any encouragement going forward that he could figure out the three-point shooting, or do you not even see the correlation just because he is so bad at the line right now?
Real quick, Laz, I'm just going to give a number. 54% between 3 and 10 feet. Those are 28% of his attempts. And then he is 46% between 10 and 16 feet. Doesn't take a lot of those, but those are kind of the numbers to back up what Amari's saying there. So yeah. Go ahead, Laz.
So to me, this is like kind of like a Bryce the Scout question in my mind, because the jumper, when he's not thinking about taking a jumper, looks a lot different than the jumper when he is thinking about taking a jumper. At the beginning of the season, it was even worse, right? I thought his shot was very regimented, right?
Yeah,
it was
sure.
Like feet, arms, hands, elbow, like extend, like you could like see the gears like turning in his head. And like over the last couple of stretch of games, you see maybe those gears are turning faster, but the shot is still kind of a little like piecemeal.
Mechanical. Yeah.
Mechanical is a great word.
Mm-hmm. Well, because the mid-range, Laz, he's just jumping as high as he can. I'll be honest. I love to give credit where it's due. Wes is the one that brought this up to me, is maybe they should let him jump higher. Like, I would love to know the height of his jump on that mid-range jumper compared to the height of his jump on that corner three, specifically earlier in the year. I feel like they had almost got him, and I'm not blaming them. I realize they had to break down his shot and start with the foundation. I'm not blaming the Pistons or their development. I'm just saying, it's like he barely jumped off the floor with the corner. I was like, maybe you just let him be an athlete, right? Like, we've all played with these type of players, these guys or girls that are really good athletes. And maybe the jumper doesn't look great, but they just find a way to make enough shots. And I just kind of wonder if just let him jump and shoot it. And because I think you're right. I think he's overthinking it. It's very mechanical. The free throw percentage still makes you a little bit concerned. I don't think he's always going to be this bad. You know, where are you at, Laz? Like, what do you think in terms of, like, it's going to improve a little bit, even if it's just the corner threes?
Yeah, I do think there is something to the, like, let him jump on his jumpers. I wonder from a, like, off-season mechanical standpoint if, like, I don't know, having him jump 3,000 times a day is, like, maybe not good from a long-term perspective.
Yeah.
And, like, that might be why they're repping it that way. But, yeah, I mean, he looks so much more comfortable when he's able to shoot, like, the way his body, like, wants him to. And so I do absolutely think there's, like, some there. But I also think it's possible to transfer that comfortability or to expand that comfortability that he has, like, to a more mechanical shot, right? I think as he practices it more and gains comfort with it, I think, like, that's what we're seeing from the beginning of the season to now, right? Like, he's gotten more comfortable with the more set shot, and we're seeing elevated results. Still not good results, right? But elevated. He's shooting, like, 17% or something from three on the year earlier this year. And so, like, even 30% is a big jump.
Yeah, and Asar is interesting because he's almost, like, a case study of, you know, as we get deeper into, you know, I guess computerizing basketball and we break things down to, like, the, you know, almost just like the sales of the game, right? And you read about Overtime Elite, all the technology they had to get guys' jumpers right. Like, I wonder if this offseason you just, I don't want to say, like, throw out the book, but you just tell Asar, like, just go out and shoot. Like, don't worry about mechanics. Just shoot till you feel comfortable. And if it could help him to just get away from maybe what the perfect jumper should look like. Like, don't even think about that. Because there's a lot of good shooters who have bad mechanics. I mean, you know, I think that's, to an extent, that's even subjective, right? Because you have guys like, a lot of people question if Halliburton can shoot, even though his sample size in college was like 41% high volume. Like, just statistically, there's no reason why you would ever question if he could shoot, because he had all the markers of a truly great shooter. But people got his form and they're like, oh, he's like going to be able to get that off. It's like, do you just tell Asar, like, don't even think about that. Like, just take as many jumpers as comfortably as you can this summer and then come back. And does that help you?
The form is messed up. Like, Halliburton's form is crazy. Like, I watched the 3-point competition and you get the zoomed in version and his hand starts, like, over here and then gets under the ball as he's like, I think back to it. I wasn't doing it at the time, but I'm like, no wonder people question whether he could shoot off the bounce or over a contest, because it's a very unique form. I agree. Like, I'm with this though, Amari. Like, let him be an athlete. You drafted him number 5 because he's a crazy athlete and a crazy worker. Just go let him be an athlete and kind of figure it out naturally. Laz, I want to ask you about his defense, though, because I think he burst onto the scene, started at Summer League. He works hard. The defensive playmaking, he'll take tough matchups. I thought the last couple games were some of his more impressive, like, on the ball against different level of stars here, but I thought he made Mikal Bridges' life miserable in that Pistons win over the Nets. Yeah. And straight up, Luka may have eventually figured it out because he's Luka. He had Luka frustrated as all get out in that first quarter, first half. And you could tell he was sick or whatever, you know, early in that game. They were showing cuts of him to the bench. What have you thought about Asar's defense? What does that mean for the Pistons' big picture? All of that kind of moving forward, irregardless of the offensive quote-unquote concerns.
Yeah, he's the best perimeter defender on the team, just like point blank period, and went and has the potential to be like an all defense level defender at that spot. And so that makes, like, that is a possibility that, like, makes him really intriguing and makes you want to keep him around. I agree. Bryce, like, I'd have to ask you this, but, like, I thought the Nets, like, did not have too much structure to their offense.
Yeah, it's weird.
So, like, that makes defending a lot easier when it's like, all right, like, after 14 seconds, it's like, all right, guys, like, let Dennis Schroeder cook, or, like, let Mikal Bridges cook. And it's like, okay, like, all I have to do is stop this guy one-on-one, like, deal. Like, I don't have to think about anything. I just like, me and my man, like, that's a lot easier.
Yep.
But he's been really impressive. He's really impressive. The contrast between him and Jaden Ivey getting around screens is just always just, like, really, like, stark relief to me. You see the athleticism, like, let him be an athlete. You see that in some of the plays he makes around the rim. He had a huge block who was that on? I think it was in the Brooklyn game. On somebody had like a step through, and he threw it into the third row. And it's like, like not everybody can do that. And so it's just, yeah, I'm really impressed with what Assar brings as a defender. And I think that makes him a more, I'm not going to say the word core, but a more salient piece of this team moving forward.
Yeah, we got to get to this core conversation and offseason. We're going to get to it, but we got to talk Cade. We went 20 minutes. We haven't talked Cade Cunningham, who kind of has been hooping recently. So we want to get your thoughts on him. We got to talk Jaden Ivey, obviously, maybe a few other pieces. And then we will kind of step back and take a bigger picture. We got to go to a break. Amari, whenever we come back, let's ask Laz his thoughts on Cade Cunningham.
Crime lovers are always looking for new and engaging content.
The Already Gone podcast covers stories from Michigan and the Great Lakes region. Cases you haven't heard before, like the Mayo Hunters or the murder of 16-year-old Justin Mello. Plus, better-known cases like the death of Jane Bishara and Illinois' own Lori Dann. Already Gone started in 2016, so there is a big back catalog for you to enjoy. Find Already Gone on Apple Podcasts, Good Pods, or your favorite podcatcher.
All right, we're back with segment two. I tweeted this last night. I didn't tweet it. I put it in my story, actually. But going into last night's game, pretty much since November 30th, if you cut off his first like 18 games of the year, when he was still getting his form back, he's averaging 23 points, 7 assists, 3 turnovers, and he's shooting like 48% overall, 38 from 3. 86 at the line. So you're talking like a guy who's bordering on like elite efficiency for a guard. Like the 3-point shooting can still improve a bit, but like 38% in that span is great. And then last night, like I feel like this week, it's not like a breakout week because he's been good for a while, but you just look at what he's done and then they go shot for shot with Luka in the first half last night, you know, keeping the Pistons in that game. Where Cade is now, how close is he to maybe the ideal version of where you wanted to see him coming into this season, where he still had a lot to prove basically in every facet of the game?
Yeah, I think so. The caveat you put in there was like for this season. Yeah. I think that's a really important point, right? Like, yeah. Again, I know I'm kind of sick of hearing this too, but like functionally this is like year like 2.5. And so you'd still like to see improvements in terms of turnovers and other areas. But the biggest thing for me for Cade at the beginning of the season was the shot, because him being able to shoot off the dribble, him being able to shoot pull-up threes changes entirely like how defenses have to account for him. And once you start having to go over on Cade, that opens up the passing, right? That sucks in defense, that causes help rotations. And so like, to me, like that was the big thing. And now you can run, you were seeing a little bit of the thing where now Ivy has the ball and it's like a skip pass, one pass away to Cade on the wing. And you feel good about like the defense allowing Cade like take that shot, right? As opposed to like when he was shooting 32%, it was kind of iffy. But yeah, I think Cade has made real strides over the course of the season. I've been really impressed with Cade. He shot like, I think he had 8 free throws last night at well, which is always like a number I'm paying attention to, partially because like, you know, we've always complained he doesn't get enough calls, he doesn't shoot enough free throws. But also partially because like Amari said, he's shooting like 88%, 87% at the line. Like those are essentially like 3 points if you can get them. And so, yeah, I've been really impressed with what Cade has done, particularly after the All-Star break. But the turnovers are still a concern. And then one thing that showed itself in the Miami game was the lack of strength, right? He doesn't create as much separation as you might like. That was also a good contrast with Luka, right? Like Luka's just like his shoulder in the guys and guys are just like moving off of him and he can get
to Luka's also a guy who is way bigger in person than he is like on TV. Like he's massive. Like I don't think it's hard to understate to like just how physically imposing he is compared to most players. Like nobody can really budge him out the way, but not to cut you off, Les.
No, but you can see the difference in their games, right? There were a couple possessions in the third quarter, I think it was Amude that was guarding him. And Luka just like gently nudges Amude exactly into the spot he wants him to be in. And then like steps back and takes like a 17 footer. And it's like, it's just him in the gym by himself at that point. Right. Yeah. And we've seen Cade like hit that level on occasion, but we also see how much harder Cade has to work to create that separation, just because he's not as strong as a guy like Luka. He can't get guys off balance like this. Luka can, which is like no shade, right? Like Luka's like a top three MVP candidate, right? Like saying your guy's not as good as that guy is like totally fine, but it's also something I'm paying attention to, and you know that's an offseason thing, right? Like adding strength is an offseason thing for sure.
So let's just stay there. Like, do you think that is another priority for him this offseason? Like, what would be the number one thing? We can talk about his defense, which I think at times he's shown a little bit of growth. At times I'm like, man, Cade, can we get a little bit more locked in? There have been stretches where the turnovers have been better. Hasn't necessarily been the three games this week where he's been unbelievable scoring the ball, shooting the ball, even almost averaging 10 assists, but is up over 4 turnovers again. But I think I've looked maybe post All-Star break or since he came back, he actually was somewhere in the 2s. And so we've seen it be better at times. What would it be for you, Laz? The strength, the turnovers, the defense, what would be like number one?
The thing I would work on the most this season if I was Ashton would be strength with the ball in his hands.
Yeah, right? Sure.
There are a lot of times where you can see like he's in rhythm, and then he gets whacked. And that like throws him off his rhythm is like, no, you need to be strong enough to absorb contact from other people and still be able to get to your spot and do what you need to do. So getting stronger, like while I'm dribbling, would be a huge point of emphasis for me this offseason if I were a kid.
You brought up the free throw attempts. I also want to talk to, and Omari, I want to get your thoughts on this as well, because I have my opinion. You know, in this 3-game stretch, he's got to the line almost 7 times a game. What do you think the quote unquote issue is, or do you think there is an issue with him either getting to the free throw line, Laz, or some of the times he gets there around the rim and isn't able to finish? Like, is he not getting calls? Is he not creating contact? Should he just take contact better? What are your thoughts on that?
So I think some of it is he's not getting calls, obviously, but I also think a big part of it is that because of his lack of strength, it doesn't look like he's getting hit and losing the ball, but it looks like he's naturally losing the ball and then he gets hit versus like, oh, it appears that like him getting hit, it was what caused him to lose the ball. I also think like the lack of athleticism around the rim, to me, this really showed itself in the Miami game where like there was that stretch in the fourth quarter where he like was putting his head down. He was getting all the way to the rim and he got blocked like 2 or 3 times. And it's just because he doesn't elevate easily like in traffic, which is like, you know, a thing we knew about him, right? But I do think if you get blocked and you're kind of like still on the ground, like it does look like less of a foul from a referee perspective, right? But I'd be curious to see what Omari says, because Omari is the one who's actually like watching Cade like in person, right?
Real quick, I mean, there's less lower body to take contact in those situations, right? Whenever you're not getting off the ground. So yeah, Omari, what are your thoughts in terms of just need to get stronger, just needs to finish, needs to get the calls? What is it?
Yeah, I wrote about it a couple of weeks ago when we came out of All-Star break in those first 2 games. Like, I think Cade had like 55 points and like 0 free throw attempts or something like that, which you don't usually see that from like guys who have the ball as much as Cade. So I have 2 complete games where you have the ball a lot, scoring a lot, not getting to the line at all. I dove into the numbers just to kind of make sense of it. And that was different from the norm this season. Cade has gotten to the line much more this season than he did as a rookie. And when you look at his shot profile, I think that explains some of it. Cade does take more shots from mid-range than a lot of guys. You look at players like Tyrese Halliburton, some other guards who are a little bit more shot heavy and don't get to the rim as much. And, you know, they're not taking 8-9 free throws a game. You see that more so for guys like James Harden, obviously guys like Embiid and Giannis who are living in the paint. But a lot of guards are not quite at that level. And usually the ones who are guys like Ja, like Jaden Ivey is actually one of the best at drawing fouls this season. You know, but guys who live in the paint, and Cade's not that type of player. And I don't know if he ever will be. So he's averaging about 4.5 free throws this season. Even with an improved whistle, I don't know if he ever gets much higher than like 5.5 or 6. Like, that might be his max. So that's still, you know, a pretty big difference, something he could shoot for. But I just think with his shot profile, and I think just the fact that he's a 6'6 guard who, I don't want to say he doesn't play like he's 6'6, but he's not like a super, super physical guard. You know, and he could add, I think if he adds strength, that would help. But, you know, I think people should probably lower their expectations long term, probably for what his growth level is there. Because you look at his shot profile, I just don't know if he's the type of guy who's ever going to get to that level. So there's still some improvement he can make, but he's already improved a lot. And I just don't know if he's ever going to improve significantly more than where he's at right now, outside of just getting a better whistle.
So Always Learning says Cade takes mid-range because he struggles at the rim. Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah. You know, Laz started off, Amari, you're saying it, like, it is kind of just who he's going to be. I think that's why I've always encouraged and wanted to see him take more threes, even if he was shooting at 32, 33%. Part of his all-around offensive game was going to have to be him knocking down perimeter shots. I want to ask this question from Aruna, and then I want to talk about Jaden Ivey. We got to get into him as well. But he says, for Cade, what assist to turnover ratio are we looking at? So Laz, where's kind of that point? I mean, you can go 2-1. Like, I would say somewhere over 8 and under 4, right? Like, I think I can live with somebody over 8 assists, under 4 turnovers. Sorry. But like, I don't want to end 4 turnovers. Somebody that handles the ball as much as him, you're probably going to be in the threes. Yes, something in the twos would be ideal, but I don't know that we're going to get there.
Yeah. So the reason I made the face, Bryce, is because, like, literally I was going to say 8 and 3.5.
Okay, right? There we go.
It's literally the exact same thing I was going to say.
Yeah.
It's like that seems reasonable from a guy who handles the ball as much as Cade does, but doesn't play at a super high pace like a Halliburton or a Fox or something like that. But also a guy who he still has like the casual turnovers, right? Like he dribbled off his foot and like Derrick Rose Jr. got a dunk out of it in the second half, and that was annoying. But we've seen a lot less of that like over the course of the year, right? And so excising those, I think, will do a lot and has done a lot to keep his turnovers like in the normal lead ball handler range.
Do you think he's going to? Like, I'm starting to get a little concerned that these kind of lackadaisical ones actually are going to be harder to rid him of. Because we've seen this since day one, and it is 2.5 years. I kind of thought maybe he would have figured out the lackadaisical, like careless ones. And we haven't seen those ones yet. Do you think we're going to?
I do.
Okay, good.
I think like, so we forget, like Cade's still like under like 23, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There, he had a 2 hyphy turnover against Dallas where it was like a 3-on-1 break with like him, Asar, and Duren. And he's like, I'm going to throw a lob.
Yeah.
And Asar's like, I can't catch it. So bro, like, I'm sorry. And it's like, you'll still get those, right? But like, if it's, you know, you would hope that like 25-year-old Cade is like, let's get points out of this. Like, we don't have to do something cool. Like, let's get points. And I think that will, like, that maturity will assist in cutting down, like, some of those turnovers.
Real quick, Amari. Michael says, right, Doncic is a turnover machine. You just live with it to agree. I also want to point out, Doncic is a turnover machine. The rest of the Mavericks are not. Every other player on that team is not. And that's why, as a team, they're low turnovers, because their center doesn't turn it over. Their wings don't turn it over. And that is a little bit of an issue right now with this young Pistons team. Omari, where are you at? Cade's turnovers, assist to turnover ratio, kind of where would you like to see him get to over the next, let's say, 2 or 3 years?
Yeah. So like going back to what I was saying earlier, I have the stats in front of me now. Since November 30th, so cutting off the first 18 games, yeah, he's averaging 7.8 assists and 3.1 turnovers, which to me is perfect. Like perfect. Yeah. I mean, I think if he's that for the rest of his career, like that's completely fine. And I think his turnover issues have been a bit overblown in general this season. Like it was not overblown for the first 2 like months when he was like leading the league in turnovers by like a wide margin. But since then, he's cut down so much that it's really like it's not a non-story because you can always improve. But like of all the things he needs to improve, I think that that's pretty far down the list. At this point, as far as just like the most glaring issues, like at this point, it's more so like tightening the handle, continuing to improve as a shooter, defense, like a lot of room for growth. The turnovers are not as concerning. I think it's more glaring in games where like Cade does have the occasional off night, of course, but when you have an off night and then you also have like 6 turnovers and you have one in like the final 2 minutes where we've seen that happen enough this season to where those moments stand out. You know, I think that those moments color probably a more negative picture of where he's actually at in his career than he probably deserves. I think along with that, like you have guys like Harden and Luka who have also been high turnover guys, but they're also like 2 of the singular most impactful offensive players in the game. So it's probably easier to live with it when it's like a Harden or Luka who's playing at the MVP level and Kay is not at that point yet. You know, and I don't know if he'll ever quite be that level of scorer, but he could probably be a much better defender than those guys too. So long story short, I'm not really concerned about the turnovers. I think he's largely solved a lot of it. And for him, it's just rounding out the rest of his game so that the turnovers don't stick out as much because he's just impacting the game in so many other ways.
Again, thank you to everybody watching live. This is by far our best turnout. We have over 750 people watching live, whether it's on Twitter or YouTube right now. So thank you guys so much. Again, hit a like button, hit a subscribe button, go check out it on the pod and leave a rating, review, all of that. Just help us support, continue to grow out the Pistons Pulse. Laz, before we go to our next break, let's talk Jaden Ivey. Like this has been a very interesting, you can go as far back as you want. You can talk just about last night's game, wherever you want to take this, because there is a lot to the Jaden Ivey sophomore year conversation. Where are you at? Where do you want to start off with this?
So the place I want to start is Ivey's 3-point shooting.
Okay.
Since like in the calendar year 2024, I think she's shooting 35.8%. So we'll call it 36% from three. And like that is something you absolutely live with, yep. Right?
Yes.
But it is very Sadiq Bey-ish, where it's like one night he's going like 5 for 7 and one night he's going 2 for 7. And you don't know which one it's going to be until like that first one like hits, right? Yep. And so I think that teams still go under on him, right? And you see he has a willingness to pull when teams go under. I really noticed it in the Orlando game like a couple weeks ago. Like Suggs like kept going under and he was just like, all right, fine. Like I'm going to take these, but they don't always go in. It's tricky. But I really like Jaden has learned like an entirely different role.
Oh, this year,
to be perfectly honest. Right. Like he spent most of his first season, like playing on the ball, like getting to be a primary guy, getting to be a creator. And this whole season has been like, all right, like how do I fit next to Cade? And for a long time, it was like, how do I fit off the bench next to Cade, but like that, you know, that's in the past. We're not gonna talk about that anymore. And so now, like you see a level of comfort between the two of them growing, and that like that's encouraging. But I also think like it took a while for it to be to the point where like okay, they can play off one another instead of like a your turn, my turn type of thing. And I still think there's room to grow in that area. But Jaden being able to consistently be a like 3 for 7 guy will help a lot in that area, I think.
I have questions sometimes. So Amari, I'll ask you this first and then Laz. I think Jaden's taking too many for my liking over the last month or so. I want him, right? A defender goes under, he's got to make him pay, right? He's mm-hmm. got to get his feet set, make him pay. There's some of these ones in transition though, where I'm like, no, I think I would rather you go ahead and attack a closeout or give a one more pass or something like that. So Amari, I looked, Jaden right now is taking, what is it? Almost 8 per 100 possessions. If we just go per game, he's taking right around 4.5, which is what he did in his rookie season as well. Do you ever find yourself in the middle of the game going, man, Jaden's taking too many threes right now? Or are you comfortable with the shot diet that J.I. has from the 3-point line?
Like both. It's like on one hand, like if there's a season where you're going to take so many threes, like this is the perfect season
sure.
to do okay. it. You know, along with that, like I look at his last 5 games, he had 9 attempts last night. He had 9 attempts the night before that or the game before that. Then he had 5 and 5. Then against Cleveland, he also took 9. And he probably doesn't need to be flirting with 9 attempts a game. I think that's probably excessive for a guy who is still, for the most part, just average from that range. But with that, like I still think the 3-ball is probably one of his biggest keys for success going forward and also just to fit alongside Cade. So I don't find it hugely problematic. I think for him, it's just more so taking the right threes. Like there's games where he'll get up to a bad start and then he takes like an off balance one. And it's like, well, that's not going to go down, you know? So I also think with him, like I feel like his first quarters tend to dictate the rest of his nights. Like it doesn't sound like he shoots himself into a rhythm that much. It's either like he's knocking them down early or they're just not falling at all. So he seesaws a lot. Overall, I don't think it's that concerning, but he could improve his shot diet for sure.
All right, Laz, what are your thoughts on that? Just in terms of the ones he's taking, the amount he's taking.
So the amount is like, okay. So it's funny. I think the streakiness is just my thing, right? So like since the Portland game that he made 7 of 7, he's shooting 25%, right? Over the last 12 games. It's like that's not great. But I don't think he's a 25% from three, like 3-point shooter, right?
Yeah.
So it really just is like Amari mentioned, like how in rhythm is he able to get himself in like those first couple of minutes from a shooting perspective?
Kian says apples and oranges, but when talking Cade, turnovers part of the defense as he's under 23 and on year 2.5, but doesn't apply to. I do think we applied that to Duren's defense. Like maybe we didn't, you know, preference it in the same way, but yeah. You know,
I think the difference there is that like we talk about Cade's turnovers as a thing, right?
Yeah.
We also agree that it's gotten better like as the year has gone on. And we talk about Duren's defense as a thing, and we haven't seen that improvement over the course of the season. That's the big difference in my mind.
Yeah, and he has gotten a lot of minutes, and so you would just hope to see some improvement. Like, I put in my game notes, like, every once in a while in a ball screen defense, you'll see better hand activity. Like, he's putting it in the pocket passing window, and then sometimes he's not as active. Like, all of those type of things. The other thing is we're not calling for Jalen Duren to be traded right away. You know, we're not just throwing our hands up saying it's over. We're just saying like this does need to happen. And if it doesn't, there could be some concerns down the road with overall roster construction. And yep, Kian always appreciate it. Says, okay, fair. Thanks for explaining. Always love the interaction, guys. And we'll try to be as unbiased and fair with our conversations as possible. So thank you for the question and throwing that in there. But speaking of roster construction, Omari, let's go to break. When we come back, let's get Laz's thoughts on the trade deadline. What did he think of the trade for Simone Fontecchio and the outcome from that? Haven't saw a lot of Quentin Grimes, but did Laz think that was a good deal? And plenty of other moves to discuss. We'll dive into that right after this.
Lovers are always looking for new and engaging content.
The Already Gone podcast covers stories from Michigan and the Great Lakes region. Cases you haven't heard before, like the Mayo Hunters or the murder of 16-year-old Justin Mello. Plus, better-known cases like the death of Jane Bishara and Illinois' own Lori Dan. Already Gone started in 2016, so there is a big back catalog for you to enjoy. Find Already Gone on Apple Podcasts, Good Pods, or your favorite podcatcher.
All right, we are back with segment 3. Let's talk about the deadline. And we're going to get into Tech first. I mean, he's come off the best game of his career, 27 points. I think he was 11 for 4 or 5 from 3 last night. And to me, I think that trade has just been like a straight win for the Pistons, just seeing how well he's played.
We haven't seen the new contract yet, Omari. We don't know what the contract's... No, I'm just kidding.
We have not seen the new contract. So if he makes $40 billion this summer, okay, maybe I'll change my tune a little bit. Laz, where are you with Fontecchio right now?
I love Fontecchio like in his role, right? I very much think he's like a great role wing player. I think... Mm-hmm. At times, because he's the best only movement shooter they have, like they'll break, they'll bust out some sets, and then you're like, okay, like we've run like some floppy for Simone Fontecchio like twice, and it's like is this what we're really doing? But like I understand why they have to do it from a balance perspective, but I also like that he gives effort on defense. After Assar was ill, he got the Luka assignment, and I thought he did like as good a job as you could expect a guy in his position to do, right? That's happened to him before. What game was that? Oh my goodness. When they were playing the Clippers, he got the Kawhi assignment.
Okay, sure.
And I was like, okay, they're going to put Tech on Kawhi. Like, let's see how this goes. And it didn't, like, it went, like, okay, right? Like, he didn't get flambéed, which is like, hey, like, that's kind of good, actually. Mm-hmm. So I was a big fan of the Fontecchio trade. The other thing I will say is that, like, yeah, that's pick like 32 or whatever, but like they can't absorb another like young dude, right?
Yeah.
Like they needed a more established guy. And so like, yeah, from a purely value perspective, like I didn't love it, but from a like what kind of product are we going to put on the court like next season and beyond? Like it made a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, that's a perfect way of saying it. You're already going to add another top 5 pick, which maybe we'll talk about if we get a little bit of time here in a bit. But and then you're going to add another one that, like you say, there's just not enough minutes for all of these guys if you're going to prioritize Cade and Ivy and Assar and Duren and Grimes and Stu and on down the list. Like, there's just not enough minutes. I think Fontecchio, like, this looks like a real win. I guess my question then is, Laz, and I'm glad you brought up the defense, because yes, Luka went crazy. You didn't bring Fontecchio to guard that guy. You just brought him in to be competent. And I like, you can hear him on the broadcast saying like, low man, low man. Like, so he's communicating defensively. I think he's been a little bit better off the bounce than I thought. Like, he's done a little bit of that I didn't think. So thoughts on that, Laz? And then also, I guess we can talk a little big picture here in terms of starting lineup. I think Fontecchio should be in the starting lineup. And I don't care whether it's over Assar or over Stew. After what we saw against the Mavs, I would probably say Stew because I think the defense Assar brings is really valuable. So thoughts on Fontecchio off the bounce and then also kind of drive that into potentially him in the starting lineup and where you would go with that.
Yeah, I think Fontecchio, if he gets an advantage like created for him, like he can definitely like take advantage
yes,
of it.
Yeah.
He's 6'8", so like he's bigger than you think. He's not like an elite athlete, but he's a pretty good athlete.
Yeah.
And so like if the defense is in rotation, like he can definitely take advantage of it. Do I want him like operating like in isolation? Like not particularly.
Yeah.
But you're right, Bryce. Like he has been. Actually, it's like it's interesting because like every time the Jazz played against us the last couple of seasons, I'd be like, that Fontecchio guy is like not bad, actually.
Yeah.
And now he plays and you see like a little bit of like, oh, OK, it wasn't just like when he played against us. Like, no, this is legitimately like he's a good NBA player. So, yeah.
No doubt. I've also been impressed by his handle. Like he's been able to take guys off the dribble a bit. Like he's shown some playmaking chops. But there's a lot more to his game. And granted, I've only watched the guy whenever they played Utah, you know, which is twice a year. So I'm not sure how much of that he was showing in Utah, but he's like, his handle's been good. I've been happy to, you know, just seeing the way he's been able to get to the rim. Like I'm looking at cleaning the glass now, like he's shooting, he's 24 of 36 at the rim as a Piston, which is fantastic, especially considering that he's usually the best floor. He is the best floor spacer in any lineup he's in. Right. So you could just see the upside from there. Right. Like, let's say you could add other guys who could add what he brings and you put those guys around Cade and then you start to see the makings of a much better functioning offense. I also throw out that when he was starting, the Pistons were like a league average defense. So there's a lot of evidence in favor of Simone having that type of role with this thing.
All right. I don't want to ask Laz about any other specific, we haven't seen enough of Grimes yet. And I don't think we've seen Grimes at his best, even whenever he did play, like he wasn't necessarily making shots, to ask individual players. I want to ask you this. I want to get your thoughts and Omari, obviously, as well. Do you think the front office learned anything from the offseason, the start of the season, and then the moves that were made at the trade deadline? Like, did you see some sort of progress, I guess, in terms of what they valued, in terms of what they did this offseason, then what they did at the deadline? Anything that gives you some hope or think that their mindsets changed or progressed?
So, kind of no, but... I think they did fine at the deadline, right?
Okay.
Like we just talked about how we're a fan of Fontecchio, like in that role. I like the concept of Quentin Grimes.
Sure.
Like, if he ever plays. But so not to toot the Bad Boys, Detroit Bad Boys horn, but like Sean Corr had a really great tweet thread post deadline that was just like, hey, like Troy Weaver is like, it's been 4 years. Like Troy Weaver is just a really reactive GM, right? And he needs to see it like on the floor in order to react. You think back to at the very beginning of his tenure is like, hey, like we should probably get a lob threat for Cade, right? And it's like, oh, like, okay, it's like, oh, it took like 40 games in the trade deadline. It's like, oh, okay, we need like Marvin Bagley because Cade needs a lob threat, right? And it's like, oh, we should probably get some like Cade and Ivy like probably need some spacing, right? And it's like, oh, okay, well, yeah, like, yeah, we'll turn Kevin Knox into like Fontecchio, right? And it's like, oh, we need some guys who can play both offense and defense, right? So it's like, okay, well, that's Fontecchio and Grimes. It's like, these are things that like armchair analysts could be like, hey, like the Pistons like don't really have a lot of roster balance between offense and defense. Like they can put together some good defensive linemen, and some good offensive lineups, but like they don't really mix. And it's kind of striking when it's like he needs to be able to see like, oh, okay, like, you know, Stewart didn't grow as much as a defender, as like a wing defender, as we would have liked. And so like, we got to adjust from that. Or, you know, like, oh, like, well, Boyan got hurt. And then when he returned, he was like just as bad on defense as he was last year. And it's like that became a problem for us. Like when we're trying to develop like Durin as a rim protector. Right. And so it's like that he's just a very reactive GM. And I think that's probably a trait of his, but it's also like, it's going to cause issues if your front office like isn't forward thinking.
Yeah. I think what this season showed, yeah, just going off of your point, Laz, is, you know, I think Troy built this team based off of his own evaluations of what he believed guys could become rather than what they currently are. You know, you go into the season and it's like, Bogey and Burks are some of the only guys on the team who can shoot. And, you know, we have a starting front court, you know, with basically like, you know, half of a shooter, right? Because Stu could hit a high percentage, but teams still aren't really closing out on them. So it's not really accomplishing that. And, you know, we saw that the roster was very deficient in a lot of key things, you know, like hoping Wiseman or Durham become a good rim protector. And neither of those guys do, or hoping that Stu can basically hold down that front court on his own defensively. And he can't, you know, so you have a lot of players who are being overextended, over leveraged, and basically put into roles based on what you think they can do rather than what they're actually doing. And I think this trade deadline was, okay, like, let's just now shift our focus on getting guys who can actually do what we need, right? So you get Fontecchio and Grimes, two guys who can shoot and like really defend. Grimes hasn't shot well, and he's only played a couple games, but defensively, you could see pretty immediately that he's an upgrade over the vast majority of the roster. And, you know, I think that's probably been the learning experience for Trey in the front office this season, just as a first time GM, right? Like, you can't just build a team off of your own evaluations and what you think guys could do. You have to get proven production at some point. And that's sort of what the shift has been now. You know, they've been sitting on this cap space for, you know, a few seasons in a row, waiting for the right moment, but you haven't put a competent team on the floor in that span either, you know, just believing that young guys are going to step up, you know, kind of magically and do things that they haven't done. So yeah, very much, I think, just watching Troy kind of learn the job in real time, you know. And I see some people in the comments mentioning, and, you know, I would agree that the trade deadline is probably the one complete positive this season, maybe outside of like Cade playing well, is that they actually went and got some NBA players. And they're still a bad team, but they're not like the worst team in the NBA. You know, they've actually just improved pretty substantially. They're just tied for the worst team in the NBA, you know.
We're both the Wizards now, right?
I think it's back think to so. Tied.
They're like, they're tied in the wins column.
Oh, they beat Charlotte. So. They beat Charlotte. That's right. Yeah.
No, yeah.
So we'll see. But the needle has moved forward, regardless of how little that needle, you know, has moved. And I think that's, if there's anything to give you any hope for the future, it's just that they seem to have a much firmer understanding of what the team needs. And now you could actually move that needle forward now.
Well, I think the scary thing is, Laz, what if it always has to be reactionary, right? Yeah. Like, it's been great that they've seen, okay, this didn't work, let's go get this. But because they've always been late, they've always had to overpay as well. And then that's been, oh, this guy didn't work. Okay, well, now we'll trade him for more than, or we won't get back what we traded for him whenever we get rid of him, those type of things. Also, if you guys saw me smiling like an idiot, my wife brought home a Starbucks, and these are the advantages of a staycation: is there are no kids around, so your wife can run the Starbucks and bring it during the middle of the podcast. So nice. Shout out my wife, who lets me be a kid and do kid things in terms of podcasts and content creation and all that. Okay, we got a few questions. Laz, I know you want to talk a little bit of NBA draft before we go, and then we'll get you out of here. So Derek Brown says, we can just have a Marcus Sasser quick conversation here, Laz. Are you concerned about Marcus Sasser as the backup point guard? He's very small, in my opinion. That's Derek Brown's there. What are your thoughts on Sasser thus far, and specifically maybe kind of his size and his role?
So I think Sasser is like fine as what he is. I don't know if I think he might be like a small two as opposed to like a point guard. He's a good shooter. Yeah. Like, can take guys off the bounce. But like as a table setter, as a distributor, like, there's a little bit to be desired. And he's already like, as a 4-year college guy, like, I think that like that kind of might just be who he is. And so like, I'm not down on Sasser. I like him in his role, but I also like, if they went in a different direction at backup point guard, like, I wouldn't be like super duper torn up about it, right? I'd be like, it's a little bit of a waste of a first round pick if they go in a different direction. Mm-hmm. It'd be another like front office, like, hey, like, oh, we didn't like probably see this coming. We just kind of, it's like we took this guy based on what we thought he could be as opposed to like what he actually was. But all that is to say, I like Sasser. Like, I'm fine with him as the backup point guard for now.
I think a lot of the issue with Sasser is just that he's being miscast. Like, there should never be a lineup where he's the primary ball handler. Agreed. The only ball handler. Not just primary, but only. Like, and that's, you know, and I think that magnifies his flaws. Like, he was drafted because he's an ideal player to put next to Ivy and Kay, because he could do some secondary ball handling and he can really, really shoot the ball.
But like, if it's like him and Grimes.
But if it's him and Grimes,
this thing will work.
And Fontecchio off the bit, like, that lineup just doesn't make sense. And that's
It just doesn't work.
I envisioned, hey, we bring Sasser in to play next to Cade, so then we can stagger IV minutes, and Sasser makes sense because you have this jumbo initiator, so you can play a smaller two guard who spaces the floor. And we just, I would love to know how many minutes him and Cade have actually played together. I may look that up as you guys answer this next one, because that's where I thought the value may would come from whenever they made. And that's, again, they traded. Not only is that a first round pick, Laz, they traded second round picks to move up. I didn't hate the move in the moment, but it, like you said, Amari, you got to use him the right way. So Ryan says, hey guys, love the pod. How realistic is the possibility of using our cap space to trade for a big name in the offseason without having to give up any, here you go, Laz, core players, also who might be available? So, you know, Amari, we've talked about this a little bit with Keith Smith, but Laz, just to get your thoughts on the cap space, what do you want to see happen this offseason? What would be a big win for you?
That's a really good question. I think like the way to go is probably to trade for a more established wing player so that either Assar or Stewart isn't starting, right? Like Tobias Harris is a name that's been like floated out there a lot. You could definitely see how a lineup of like Cade, Ivy, Fontecchio, Harris, Durham like makes sense, right? That's a little weird because like you're bringing Stu and Assar off the bench and it's like, I don't know how that's going to go offensively and you still don't have enough ball handling. But like, I do think wing is where they're really deficient. And so I think that that's where I would like to see their focus their efforts this offseason. What I will say is like, that's a lot of conditions in that question. Like they might, if they went out and like traded a like quote unquote core player this offseason, I would not be stunned, right? It makes, from a cost control perspective, it makes sense. Cade's extension is coming up. If you keep both Ivy and Durin, their extensions are going to be right after that. And so like your window for acquiring like a $25 to $30 million a year wing who like fits next to those three guys is like this offseason and like the trade deadline next year. And then otherwise, like guys start getting paid, it gets harder to add guys. And so we'll see how that goes for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing with this is, and you alluded to it earlier, you are going to add another top five pick. So if you had to trade one of the young core type of players that we all talk about, you're replacing them with another one.
Yeah, and you can't pay all those guys, right?
Yeah.
You can't pay all your top five picks like their top five picks. Like you run out of flexibility really quickly doing that.
All right, Laz, let's get, I know you had a question. You put it in the private chat. So, I don't know which player you're wanting to ask me about. Or hold on real quick. Cade Cunningham, Marcus Sasser is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, ninth in terms of minutes played. Cade Cunningham. So the most is like Durin, Ivy, Assar, and Stewart.
And then, that's a travesty. Like, that's just completely misusing Sasser.
Yeah, so it's ninth, and that's essentially last out. Like, it's still behind Boyan, Killian, Bagley, Burks, who aren't
behind
the roster.
Killian is, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And then it's only ahead of, like, Wiseman, and then guys who have just recently joined the roster. Like, Fontecchio will play more minutes with Cade, which makes sense. In a next game or two than Sasser has played with Cade
all season.
All season. So just not something we've seen a lot of. So, okay. I know you had a question.
So in talking about the wing depth and them needing to add wings this offseason.
Okay.
So the two guys I've been looking at with this top five pick are Cody Williams.
Yep.
And Zachary Kaiser.
Richisher.
So it's like, I have a little bit more of a feel for Cody Williams' game.
Sure.
But the Richisher kid, like, I wanted to ask you as the scout, Bryce, like, it is like, it seems like there's a lot to love there.
Yeah.
But also the shot looks a little funky.
It does.
And he's really skinny.
He is.
We haven't really seen too much like ball handling stuff with him yet. So like he intrigues me a lot. But I also think like if the Pistons took another French project, they might be riots in the streets. And so like, where are you with him in particular? Like, that's the guy I wanted to hear you like speak on the most.
Yeah, no, I have Richisher number one on my Pistons big board. And this is assuming you wouldn't want to necessarily do like draft Alex Saar and trade Jalen Durin. Like, we've talked about this a little bit, but I mean, I think Alex Saar is really good. That's a whole nother conversation. We had it last episode. So I'll read my quick notes on Richisher. Off the ball 3-and-D wing with potential to be a forward as he grows and fills out his body because he is 6'9", 6'10". He's only 18, turns 19 on April 8th. Does not currently offer a ton on the ball offensively, but will provide floor spacing and a nice feel for offensive rebound cutting, getting out in transition. defensively, not a lockdown wing defender, but major value in overall defensive system with some real versatility long term. May never be a number one scoring option you're looking for, but just kind of your prototypical NBA wing archetype. So I agree with some of the shooting like mechanics things. Me and Wes have had this conversation a lot recently. Like, then the day the kid's shooting over 40% from three in a professional league. Yeah. And I've gotten almost completely away from judging on that type of stuff. He's gotten better throughout the year as an 18-year-old playing in that league. I think he can defend. Like, I think he fits into the roster really, really nice. Cody Williams' shot concerns me a little bit as well. It's even lower.
Slow.
Very slow.
Yeah.
Low volume. Hasn't played a lot of games this year, comparatively speaking, because of injuries and different things. And he is skinny as well. The idea behind Cody compared to Risache is Cody definitely has some more potential on ball stuff. Like, he has more feel, passing, those type of things. I think Risache is like a true off the ball player, but I would keep Risache number one because there's some defensive stuff there as well.
So in your mind, Risache would be a better, I'm thinking about like who pairs well with the wing with Asar. Sure. For now, right? Like, Richardson would be a better match in that scenario.
I think so also, just because there's a little bit more size. Now, I don't know how they're each going to fill out their bodies, right? Like, you look at Cody Williams and say, well, if he fills out his body like his brother Jalen, maybe you would rather have that, right?
Yeah.
I think Risache is a better fit in general because he's a true off-ball player that will space the floor, transition, cutting, offensive rebounding. I think if you want to get the high-end outcome of Cody Williams, there's a little bit more like you want to put the ball in his hands at times and let him do just a little bit. But again, it's like, is Risache going to fill out? Like, is his body going to fill out? Because then at 6'9", you could, play him as a four as well. So I like Risache as the best fit right now for this team. And in a draft where there's no clear-cut number one, I think if the Pistons had number one, that's who I would take. But if they're at number four, you may get him also, right? Because someone will talk themselves into Alex Sarr. Someone may, after last night, somebody may talk themselves into Reed Shepard at two or three. You know, Rob Dillingham is all over the map. You know, Cody Williams, we've talked about,
Reed Shepard should be in that conversation. Like, that dude is insane.
If they take another small guard, though,
I mean, here's the thing. Okay, so we've had this conversation with Alex Sarr, right? And Jalen Duren, you want to take Reed Shepard and then trade Jaden Ivey? For like a true wing forward, I don't love it. I am very bullish on the Cade Ivy backcourt, but I mean, Reed Shepard would fit really nicely in terms of extreme floor spacer. Here's the thing about Reed. There are some on-ball defensive concerns. Like, even if you watch that Tennessee game, he got beat off the dribble a few times. Now, that doesn't mean he shouldn't be a top five pick, because with what he does shooting-wise, he absolutely should be. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be fun drafts. Right now, draft stuff is slow because there aren't the names. When people really get into it, the conversations are going to be awesome because there are so many conversations to be had, not just about the Pistons, but just in general. Every team's going to be having these same conversations. But yeah, Laz, I like Risache. I think he's like, if we get the number one pick, it's not going to be a guy to be like, oh my gosh, this is face of the franchise like we were with Cade, but it's a good fit, I think.
Yeah. I'm still trying to put a lineup that's like Cade, Duren, and like 3 6'8" dudes who can like handle and defend a little bit. And like, I'm wondering, as I'm trying to do that, I'm like, okay, is Cody or Richardson like a better fit for that lineup? But it's encouraging to know that like both of them, I think, have potential to fit in different areas of that.
Here's the other one. You fall a little bit further. Matas Bezelis is another guy that I think fits fairly nicely. Go ahead.
I'm glad to see the shooting improvements over the course of the G League season. He needs the ball in his hands a little bit too much for my liking.
Sure.
And I don't think he's like, I don't know if he's good enough to have the ball in his hands that much.
There's a lot of
he's a tough evaluation. Like I said this the other week, like I don't know what to make of him, honestly. he could be a bust. He could be the best player in this class. I have no idea.
Well, there's a lot of Franz comparisons. I'm like, we're a little bit like, I understand why. Here's the thing. I'm giving the Ignite guys a pass. Like, it's, guys, if you haven't watched full G League,
the development situation is that bad. You're just like,
it's not great. It is not great down there. There's no true point. Like, there's a lot of stuff. We don't have to get into it. I'm going to self-promote here a little bit. Kian brought it up. Trevor Lane, Keith Smith mentioned you're doing some work with their basketball bulletin. So guys, if you want some NBA draft, Yeah. So on the Basketball Bulletin Substack, which is the front office show, friend of the pod, Keith Smith, and then Trevor Lane, they have a Substack starting tomorrow. Actually, Monday morning, I'll release my first NBA draft scout over on their Substack. So nice. They brought me on board over there. I may even make some appearances on their pod. Obviously, Keith is a friend of our pod. So yeah, a little self-promotion there. Sorry. But yeah, the Ignite situation.
You can self-promote on your own pod, Bryce.
Is that okay to self-promote on your own pod?
I think that's okay.
Yeah, guys, I'm just trying to drag out another few minutes here because we're six people away from 1,000. And I never thought we would ever get close to 1,000. So I'm like, all right, I'm having a staycation here, Laz and Amari. My wife's not going to be mad at me. If we drag this out for 2 or 3 minutes and we hit 1,000, that is another bucket list podcasting thing for me to check off the list. So Laz, truly though, I feel like we have a blast every time you join us. We have to make this happen more often, more consistent, whatever we got to do to get you on the pod. I don't know how Amari feels, but I'm pulling the Trump card. I don't care how Amari feels. We are getting Laz on the pod more because you are amazing. And I feel like these go perfectly. So thank you, man.
I appreciate you guys bringing me on in my semi-retirement, right? I appreciate still having perceived value of things to say. Absolutely. And schedules are in flux, but anytime I'm able, like, I love to come on. I love to chop it up with you guys. Like, I love talking draft stuff with Bryce because I know he's watching these dudes, and like, I'm not watching them nearly as closely. So I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for having me, guys.
Laz, you know, it's always a blast, man. Like, I've talked about it on here, but just being my Pistons, brother at the State News all the way back in 2012 when I first got there, and everybody was like, oh, you got to be, like, you had just left. Everybody was like, oh, you got to be Laz. Like, Laz loved, you were like known as the Pistons guy. And like, yeah, we would love to have you on. Whenever you want to come on, we'd love to get you on again.
Laz was absolutely the standard whenever I joined this world of Pistons content creation. Like, I wanted to be Laz Jackson when I first got into this. Him and Sean, gave me my chance at Detroit Bad Boys. I can never, ever, ever thank those two enough for that. So Laz is truly the OG in my eyes. Like, nobody better.
No doubt. And I also respect that you were able to pull away this season and not have to do this. Because now you have a lot of thoughts to share whenever we bring you on, right? Like, you have all these thoughts that I've just been stewing for a while. And that's what we need. We need that. I've been stewing on this for a while. And now I can just unleash energy. Thanks to everybody who tuned in as well. We just got to 999. I'll go ahead and round that up to 1,000. We did it. Yeah, super gratifying to see. We're going to have to do some more Sunday afternoon recordings. 1,000, we did it. There it is. Man, that's crazy. Yeah, we're going to have to record on Sundays.
Should have got a screenshot because it only lasted for about half.
There it is again. So, yeah, again, thanks everybody for tuning in. We'll definitely do this again with Laz as soon as we can. And I'll go ahead and close this out. Big thanks to our audio producer, Robin Chan, our editor-in-chief, Dakota Avery Nichols, and our executive producer, Anjanette Delgado, and our sports editor, Kirkland Crawford. And big shout out to Wes, as always. And we'll talk to you all next week.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.